Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. I think let's get started with maybe a round of self-introduction while we waiting for our other speaker. So yeah, hi everyone. Long time no see after Denver. It's very nice to see you guys again and talk to you. Since we met in Denver, and for those who didn't know this group before, we hosted an AI battle this year in East Denver, and it was so fun. And today is sort of a reunion of the group, and it's a time we finally bring some, serious discussion on AI and Web3 convergence sort of thing. And yeah, let's just get started with a round of self-introduction. I guess maybe starting with Henry.
Hi everyone. I'm Henry, CTO of RSF3, and I think everyone here should be pretty familiar with what we are doing. If you're not, there's a short introduction on RSF3. It's a decentralized network indexing and structuring open information, and we turn unstructured information into structured ones so they can be used, can be consumed by AI model training. And Max Clemens.
Hey everyone, I'm Clemens. I'm the lead AI evangelist for Consensys. We build products like MetaMask, Infura, Linea, Phosphor, all that fun stuff. And I've helped implement some internal AI agents that we use to help augment our workforce. Happy to talk more about that. Should I pass it over to?
Yeah, I'll go.
Go ahead.
Hey guys, I'm Ben Jones. I'm CMO of P1X and lead of Laws AI with Meta's Layer 2. We are a DAO-based Gen AI infrastructure, creating decentralized, DAO-based, individual-centric DAO-based AI. I'll pass it over to Zhao.
All right. Hey, everyone. I had a blast in Denver. Thanks for inviting me in again. I'm João Fiadeiro. I run product at Catena Labs. We're a product studio working on things at the intersection of AI and crypto, building a consumer product called Decent AI, and also working on some foundational infrastructure for kind of decentralized AI as well. Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, and I think last let's welcome Elton from Near. This is our new like AI friend, but we're really happy to have you here today.
Awesome. Well, I'm an AI friend, so that's awesome that I'm a man of AI.
Friends.
Hey guys, I'm Elton. Background is actually machine learning. I trained deep neural networks when back in 2019, 2020. Actually was working on this interesting problem called sim-to-real transfer, which is essentially training a model in a simulation and transferring that into the real world zero shot. That's very important in robotics because you don't want robots to actually fail in the real world. What I'm doing currently is I work in Near Foundation and have been sort of working with RSS3 folks quite closely recently. That things will come up next week. So happy to join this conversation.
Cool. Okay, so let's just get started on the questions. And I think the very first question, I'll pass it to Joanne and Ben, which is since we're talking about this AI and Web3 integration thing, can you explain how AI can be adapted to Web3? Or like how? Or what are some of the existing innovative uses you've seen?
Yeah, happy to give some thoughts there. I think there's really a lot of opportunities at many different layers of the stack, right? Like you can start with decentralizing the data itself and the compute necessary to train models. You have folks like Jensen doing some really cool work there. And then you can kind of go down one layer, think about the decentralization of the inference piece. So, you know, you have aggregators like io.net taking in nodes from Filecoin or from Render Network and basically giving people access to much cheaper endpoints compared to, let's say, Amazon instances, et cetera. And then I think you have like the more interesting applications that I think are very novel these days. Things like ZK and ML coming together, I think, is really fascinating. How you provide verifiable ML in the context of, for example, DeFi, where you want to go beyond AMMs and you want to calculate credit scores, or you have games involving NPCs. And, you know, once you have like the ZK part, you can do some really interesting things in terms of introducing new mechanics. And some things that I'm actually, I think, probably most interested in and building on is this notion of AI agents on chain. The term agent is very overloaded these days, but, you know, think about how to get AI systems operating on chain such that their output is verifiable and such that they can actually help people achieve complex goals permissionlessly. So, you know, these are four large areas that I think are pretty interesting. Ben, I'm sure you have some interesting things too to talk about. And then we can maybe go into a couple of specifics, you know, cool projects that have caught my eye recently.
Yeah, I mean, just echoing what Giles was mentioning, inference power. We have like, you know, just today, we have a company called Flex AI that just opened a cloud-based, a Kable service for AI. And, you know, just the cost of inference power is an issue. But I feel like that's another opportunity, just opportunities like on every level to kind of look at it differently, look at things differently. I feel like the DAO-based, the thing that I think is interesting is a DAO-based AI or AI, a DAO that is AI, completely AI. There's no humans in it. The small LLMs that are going on right now, people are, you know, I mean, the AI agents that people are building on the small LLMs. For us, we're looking at, we're creating this framework where there's individualist-centric DAOs, where there's a DAO of two people, which is one of them is the AI, one of them is you. And it's a kind of a mutual, you know, a bonding in a sense to humanity with AI. But the idea of like Web3 and AI coming together infrastructurally, kind of, you know, when you think of it, what is an organization look like on chain? It's a DAO. And what would it look like to have, you know, an AI that you train, that's your, maybe your clone, your copy, whatever, with other people's AIs, you know, and other decentralized AI. So that's an interesting idea that we're exploring more on. And but when it comes to power, you know, with the boom of online with boom gaming now, you know, it's because of the ease of just using Amazon for developers. Developers don't have to think about the infrastructure so much. It just, you know, it's a kind of a plug and play. You just focus on development and the power is there because it's right there. And so it's cool to see innovation on just the centralized AI side. But when it comes to Web3 AI, I feel like there's a huge amount of opportunity where guys like the guys at TinyGrad who are, democratizing the petaflop, they're, you know, which I think is delivering this month, their tiny box computer. Just creating a network where even like if you think of it from a Web3 perspective, you could tokenize that. You know, everyone has a tiny box at their home. You know, tokenization on that level as well. So I mean, those are just some interesting things that people are doing, and we're looking into as well.
Could I just add that DAO with AI was super interesting, but I like the idea of kind of self-sovereign AI because if my AI agent has control of different types of developer APIs or is kind of acting on my behalf or creating drafts on my behalf. I think it's interesting to think about, you know, your wallet, you signing the final transactions that allow it to complete those actions that are, you know, related to your personal address, related to a treasury that's managed by yourself, or you have to, you know, add an up, top up that address for it to do certain actions. So I'm really looking yeah. forward to a time where it's kind of connected to kind of addresses that we can manage and start to, you know, earn funds on our behalf. Like if it's a robo-taxi, then maybe that's a DAO, or maybe that's, you know, the robo-taxi is totally. Doing activities that are legal.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's really interesting, Clemens. I think maybe we can talk about this later in the risks type of thing. One of the things that my team is very focused on is addressing the foundational layer that actually enables that. I think it's much easier said than done, right? Like we want autonomous agents on chain doing things on our behalf, transacting with other people, transacting with other agents. But the fact of the matter is a lot of systems, especially large, even larger frontier LLMs just aren't there yet. In terms of their reasoning capabilities, in terms of their reliability, robustness. And so there's a lot of work I think that has to go into addressing the systematic issues at the AI layer first, before we start thinking too much or go down the hole too far when it comes to agents. That said, I think it's worth thinking about the use cases and kind of what's how to capture people's imagination and start going down that direction sooner rather than later.
Yeah, just to jump on what Clemens said, just the end of, yeah, like it's when it comes down to the individual, like it really opens up a lot of opportunity where it's like your individual AI agent and the use cases are there. So just, yeah, great stuff.
Okay, that's very, very interesting sauce, because at RSS3 we've been like working on some kind of open agent framework things a couple of months ago, and we actually open sourced this framework called Open Agent, which is like a open the very first open source and AI framework for like Web3 native use cases, and I'll probably pass it to Henry to give it a shot later.
Yeah. Definitely
disconnect.
Open agent. Yes, that's an interesting one, because we thought about having an AI to automate tasks and execute trading actions. And because it's kind of limited by the foundation model we are using. So, but since then we have been seeing like Phi and Llama 3, they're getting released, they're getting smaller yet retain, they're catching up with GPT-4. So I think, yeah, definitely we can definitely improve what we can do here. And really the limit the sky is the limit.
Yeah, I think there's some really cool stuff going on with Optimistic ML. I encourage others to check it out. You know, Aura is a team that's doing this, where rather than trying to create an entire ZK circuit on a network, which is very pretty much infeasible at this point with compute issues and just complexity issues, what they're doing is they're leveraging an off-the-shelf LLM like Llama 3, for example, or Stable Diffusion, and then essentially providing a ZK proof on chain of the actual trace of the output. And that's a really nice in between, in my opinion, because it allows us to actually leverage these really powerful models and have some semblance of verifiability. It's not full verifiability, but in my opinion, it's good enough for most cases. And you can do some really great stuff with that primitive. So check them out as well. Highly encourage it.
Definitely. And speaking of like the few sort of examples or existing innovations, I would like to hear from, I guess, Alton and Ben, sort of from different perspective on your thoughts of like the potential benefits of this integration of AI into Web3, or like just generally why we need decentralized AI, both from like a, I guess since Alden has a more like an AI technical background, like you've been working on, working with this machine learning or modeling stuff, and then from like a CMO sort of perspective.
Yeah, I can jump in here pretty much. So the way I think about this is, I think there's been conversation about decentralized inference. I don't think that's actually the biggest problem that crypto can solve. Like when you go and meet your folks outside of the crypto circle and kind of chat with, you know, like let's say some random person that uses GPT-4, they don't really care where it comes from, like where the model comes from. They just want to use the model, right? So on the user side, I don't see it as a big of a problem as others see it. On the development side, pretty much, I mean, the way I think about this is, if we go a bit more technical, had a bit of a harder challenges, right? You want to have some sort of checkpoints and be able to train the model as it's been trained. Mm-hmm. Just have the access to be able to, let's say, if I have this checkpoint at a certain point that I kind of get this at a certain epoch, and I want to be able to train that. So that's how I see it on the decentralized side, as to how can we build that infrastructure. I know Ilya has been thinking about that a lot in terms of like, how do we build this? The other thing is like, obviously having access is very important, right? How do, I think Jensen model has been mentioned before. If you can build, and again, right, if you can actually train as much as OpenAI can train, because the problem with there is like, even if you're decentralizing the GPU stack, being able to talk between those GPUs is a very heavy burden, right? How do you build a model where it's still decentralized, but still kind of get you the same efforts as we do? And the other thing I'd love to mention, maybe kind of poking holes here and there, but how do we, given centralized companies have tons of compute and have access to compute more than we do, how do we kind of build such a incentive system where we can actually train models as powerful as OpenAI, right? Like OpenAI can do a deal with NVIDIA and can move very efficiently than we do. How do we go and kind of play in that market while also doing it in a very open way? So those are my like thoughts. Because when you, and the other thing for the industry is like, okay, we're talking our bubble. I had a friend from Google DeepMind who is one of the folks at that built the Alpha, I think AlphaFold, which is the it solves like this biological problem. How do we make these people care about us? I think that's something that we should think about. Again, we're talking our bubbles, but the most of the bigger AI TAM is actually bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I actually agree with Alton. I think in a sense that power, because I mean, the H200 just got delivered a couple of days, you know, recently from NVIDIA. And, you know, the way how tech works is, you know, it's just exponentially cheaper because tech is just going to get better and better. And I think the inference power may not be an issue in the future as things get cheaper and cheaper. But the thing that I think from, you know, just a general, from Lazai's perspective, our perspective is that how you define, how do you find AI that benefits humanity? And I kind of feel like there's two trains of thought where just load a LLM with as much power as possible, just see what happens. And, you know, it's going to be good. You're just going to assume it's going to be good. Or I feel like, you know what, AI will eventually surpass, or it's already surpassed, you know, in some ways, humanity, but how can we attach ourselves to this rocket ship and go with it and also have, you know, mutual benefit from the development of AI, you know, in general. So for the why should we combine AI and Web3, and why is it super important, is I just think it's the way where the normal individual can can be a part of something great, but we also see it as not like a competing factor, because it just feels like you can't like Bitcoin can't at when Bitcoin started, they weren't trying to compete per se. They were just saying the thought was, this is a different alternative, you know, a different alternative to traditional finance. So at least I feel like, you know, when you think of Web3, the scalability, maybe we don't have it right now, but I feel like we will have it in the future. And I feel like if we can start small, you know, it's a different way. It's a different way, and decentralized AI is a different option. And I think the centralized AI guy, like OpenAI and all their, what they have, and, you know, they're going to create a high adoption across the board, and, you know, centralized AI will be right there with them, but just another alternative.
Cool. I guess just a little bit worrying details based off what Elton and Ben just said. What are some of the sort of technical challenges for developing, you know, like AI in such a decentralizing environment? And
yeah, so Clemens here, I think it's basically scale and compute are the main two, the same limitations that blockchains have today, which is, depending on how you implement it, you know, any type of decentralization is expensive. You're kind of substituting some VC costs and some other, you know, advertising with tokenomics or some other type of economic structure. So whatever is being created and however you maintain your chain or pay your engineers or the foundation itself, I think all of those things add on additional costs. And if you look at the goal here, I think is an infinite context window of some sort. So right now you have public train data from, you know, GPT-4 is April 2023. And so if you have GPT-5 with a much more recent and kind of, you know, Grok having the ability to look at the trending news and being able to update, I feel like that model plus the personalization on top of it, it should be just one big model, or could it be your personalized model where you learn modules on top of it? And I think that this like separation of big models versus small models versus personalized models versus private enterprise ones that could be your, you know, mergers and acquisitions AI agent that helps you with being acquired and becoming a historian of your company or something of that sort. I feel like all these things technically are quite challenging, just because it's going to be a stress on the system. And depending on where you save your data or reference your data or train your data, that's either an architectural process flow problem or something that's a little bit deeper into, you know, being able to scale the compute necessary for all these like preferences.
Yeah, and just to add on to what Clemens saying, you know, bankers now use GPUs as collateral. So GPUs at this point is equity. And so that's kind of a, you know, it's an asset.
Yeah, yes.
I would actually say it's a commodity.
Right? Or yeah, a commodity.
Yeah. You can actually like probably have options on it. You can have do futures on it. It's amazing, actually. Probably one of the best use cases of crypto to do that. Like,
yeah.
It's,
yeah, there you go. There's the new option.
You buy some GPUs and then you kind of like do futures on it, which is awesome, right?
Exactly.
It's like you're opening a GPU farm and selling your computing resources. Yeah, I agree with Clemens, because on the economic front, definitely we need to work out a balanced way to incentivize those so-called GPU owners, because currently I think if we look at AI model trainings, we are talking about three different stages. First is basically the training, which is for now is predominantly done by all the big corporations, and then the second stage is fine-tune. So we are able to fine-tune the base model released by big organizations.
And that part requires not that much computing resources. And lastly, when we are using, we're building AI agents on top of the models, we are basically doing the inference, which requires much less computing power. So this is the stage where I think decentralization is going to happen. There are some approaches already, like the classic ones, mixture of experts, which is what we are doing at RSA3. Basically, we divide a task into smaller subtasks, and then we distribute those subtasks to AI agents located, you know, all over the world. But that creates a big overhead, because we always have to ensure there is an extremely reliable network connection with minimal latency. So this is not always possible. It's very challenging to maintain in the real world. And another challenge is basically to maintain consistency across different agents, because agent one might be using a different checkpoint, agent two might be using another one. So it's always tricky to maintain, to ensure that the query's response to the same query is always consistent. And aside from this, I think Clemens also touched on the cost. So the overhead is basically decentralized. It's very expensive, right? We need to somehow subsidize this cost for this for those node operators or AI agent operators. And we kind of have to develop a viable and sustainable model. Yeah, so that's my two cents.
Cool, totally. I guess just go with this challenges for decentralizing AI question a little bit deeper. When we talk about decentralization, one topic that we've been always talking about is sort of like data privacy or like some concerns that we wanted to solve with decentralization is the like sort of security concerns, etc. And how does like integrating AI into blockchain or Web3, like how will that impact decentralization? Is there any like risk when AI is involved? Because we all know, like, if we want to build a powerful AI, we would need to collect and curate a large amount of, you know, training data as the foundation of, you know, the AI models.
I think AI actually solves, or at least partially solves that problem, because when we talk about Web3, the data is, well, generally speaking, the data is open. It's unlike, you know, OpenAI versus New York Times, where they are just obtaining the data illegally or without permission. The beauty of Web3 is that the data is openly available, most of them. It's just openly available, and we can use them to train our base model or fine-tune our model. And I don't think AI directly threatens decentralization, but there is a different perspective I'm looking at it. From my perspective, I think currently all the leading models, foundation models, they're released or withheld by large corporations like Llama and Mistral. And what if access to those models become restricted in the future? So I think that's one of the risks. Another one is not so much about risk. Those models are not specifically trained for Web3. So they may not provide most accurate or up-to-date domain knowledge. How are we going to solve that?
Yeah. I think what's interesting in this type of conversation is just that the term decentralized AI itself will mean very different things depending on who you ask, right? A lot of people who are not even adjacent to crypto still care about decentralization. And what they mean by that is really the release of open source model weights that allows anyone to run models locally using a Llama, for example. And even Apple is getting really into local models running on phones, for instance. And I think that is decentralization in its own right. And there's a lot of opportunities there because you don't have to kind of fetch data from somewhere else. Data is super heavy. We've talked about the bandwidth issues. We've talked about the data issues. if everything's running locally, there's a lot of opportunities there. I do feel like one of the larger sort of risks is the assumption that things will always work the way we expect them to. There's just still a lot of unpredictability in how these models produce outputs. And once you're talking, it's easy enough to sort of do creative tasks where almost there is okay, like generating an image. But when you're talking about an autonomous agent that is sending USDC or doing a more complex swap, it gets a little trickier there. But yeah, there's a few other risks I'd be happy to talk to.
I had a philosophical one, which I don't think I've heard get brought up, which is around, I guess, inequality that AI could create. So, you know, we all have phones, right? But there's different types of phones. We all have access to education in some ways, but different layers of education. I just feel like AI has such accelerated potential to make certain companies be worth much more or create kind of much more value. And there will be some level of inequality, mm-hmm. Especially when you bootstrap certain types of industries first, or curious how different individuals will have maybe lesser trained AI models while enterprises pay more compute to get smarter ones or can afford more expensive subscriptions, things like that. So I don't know if there's going to be like a, you know, mid-level of by base, this phone can make phone calls and can install apps. Like maybe that's like the base of the AI helpfulness. Yeah. And then there's kind of this accelerated pay subscription to get, you know, upgraded features really like make money.
That's a really good point. That's actually something I'm working on, right? It's like, how do you take a model, or how do you take actually a mix of models that draws from the best providers, open source or proprietary, create an agent and then put it on something like XMPP and make access to it completely permissionless, right? Of course, you're still talking about a digital divide that that very much exists and may very much become bigger. But I think the more we can do about not just decentralizing the weights themselves, but providing better access for people, especially permissionless access, the better. Because as you say, Clemens, yeah, I think access to these powerful models very much is a differentiator and just accelerates progress in many different ways, in many ways unpredictable as well.
And cool. So I guess this is just going to be sort of following the last question. Is like, where do we see this future of AI in Web3 or decentralized AI? And maybe like in the next 3 to 5 years, because we all know like both the AI and Web3 industry is now growing at like an exponential rate. And also, what are some of the like developments you're most excited about, speaking of this convergence?
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of thoughts there. I think, mm-hmm. Alton, you mentioned the need to have a sort of pragmatic view of what's actually useful, especially in the context of people outside of the Web3 bubble. I think the two major developments are going to be in the data sphere and in the eval sphere. From a data standpoint, as you mentioned, Henry, I feel like the IP problems are probably the biggest existential threat to the large model providers, right? Like there's lawsuit after lawsuit. And I think the more we can do to use crypto primitives to establish like a chain of provenance and a data economy that actually allows people to ethically train models and remunerate the actual providers of the data used to train those models, the better. And I think that's very much a solution that Web3 can provide. That's not one of those like a solution looking for a problem. I think the other thing that I'm excited to see is evals. Right now in the AI space, you'll see large frontier models being trained and you'll publish a paper and you'll have a bunch of academic benchmarks. and they'll have a number between 1 and 100, and you have to trust them, right? Like, you don't have the model weights, you don't have the data used, and very often the results aren't replicable. And that's a problem as I see it, especially as you create an economy of agents that can do things. And so I'd love to see more ZK type tech to enable more verifiable methods of testing evals and kind of really, you know, let's say I have an eval that, you know, I'm Google or I'm OpenAI, and I actually sort of have my all the different tasks that were used for inference in terms of generating the outputs necessary. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there so that we can actually trust those papers. And I have yet to see a real application of that yet today. So curious to see where that goes in the next couple of years.
Cool. What about Henry?
Yeah, actually, I'm more excited about the size of the model and the hardware requirements of those models, because previously, I think just 3 months or even 2 months ago, we weren't able to like run a model smoothly on, let's say, smartphone. But today, we can see like Microsoft just released this model, Phi-3, and someone actually got it up and running on their really low-end budget Android phone. So that's what excites me, because that essentially means I believe Aiton touched on that, or Ben, access to those technology, access to the cutting-edge technology is being, you know, basically the entry bar is low and everyone can access them. So that solves one of the ethical issues of technology, you know, where developing countries are constantly lagging behind. But in this case, if the model is open sourced, then I don't think that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah, I'm personally looking forward to more retail integrations. I mentioned that the piece around self-sovereign, being able to control your own private agents. I think the smaller model makes sense. It would be really interesting to see like a Tamagotchi version of like a Quest 3, you know, AI agent, meta AI agent that I can talk with and play video games with. And I feel like that would be, I think loneliness is a big problem in the world. And there's kind of some therapeutic pieces of this that I'm looking forward to.
Oh yeah, some of these AI NPCs are incredible.
I think AIs are going to replace all the NPCs in games,
at least. Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Because previously you have to write all the scripts for those NPCs to, you know, be interactive or pretend to be interactive. Now you just throw an agent behind it and drop down.
Yeah. I highly recommend a video game called Suck Up. It uses AI agents that you have to sort of convince and manipulate and lie to in order to gain access to things. It's probably one of the more interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm already downloading it. Yeah, it's Vampire Adventure.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Definitely check it out. It's very fun.
On the philosophical level, I also think that, you know, I believe there's like a private and public AI agent. I believe we can train our private AI agent with personal information, and it'll create a public AI agent that represents us, similar to, you know, people today create posts, take pictures, upload them to their social media accounts, to their LinkedIn. I feel like my public agent would be trained well enough that you can just chat with me, and there would be a human premium to actually talk with me directly. And so I was thinking about this, you know, about like Tesla full self-driving has come such a long way that robotaxis are probably not that far away. And I was thinking about insurance. Well, insurance costs might go up for people who aren't using full self-driving in kind of a longer tail end, if you extrapolate that it's safer, that it's following the speed limits and all these other rules. So yeah, I think it's interesting to think of the shift of, oh, I'm no longer posting things publicly or to my friend group, but I'm training my personal AI bot to then talk with other AI bots.
Yeah, exactly, Clemens. Especially if you own the data that, let's say, interactions between other people and that agent of yours, and that data is used to then fine-tune other models or improve other models, I think there's a very powerful economy that could be established where it's not just about the actual underlying data, it's also about the interactions themselves and behavioral aspects that allow me to better align models or fine-tune them and just generally improve them for others.
Yeah, and then you start talking about when, you know, agents start talking to each other and deals are made, organizations are formed. I mean, it's just beyond some maybe sci-fi.
Just the aside, I think the control of, like, how does AI take over? I think it takes over in kind of this very inconspicuous way based on humans relying too much on the tool. So if you have like C-suite asking its AI board member, you know, what can I do? Give me all the data to do this. And it suggests certain actions. I mean, those are fairly big actions, or making certain trades if it runs a research group that informs the traders to do those things. So I feel like there's little actions where if we use the tool too much, it's kind of like misinformation from a social media perspective. That's just the dashboard that I read and I'm in an echo chamber. So what does that look like if the tool can also, you know, converse with really high, powerful people and get influenced in that way?
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's a question for
there's
you.
There's a really cool study by BCG. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Alton.
Sorry. Would you prefer a McKinsey consultant do that, or would you prefer a AI agent do that for you?
I would prefer a McKinsey legal like for me to not say that the AI did it, but I can blame McKinsey instead. But yeah, McKinsey's yeah, probably gonna use AI in the back, right?
Yeah.
I was gonna say,
you just need to find someone to blame.
BCG did a big study with Harvard Business School where they gave access to about 800 consultants GPT-4. There's a lot of interesting takeaways. I recommend you read the paper, but one of the things that was very positive was it levels the playing field. The people who were lowest performance actually had the biggest increase in performance when leveraging Gen AI. What was interesting, on the other hand, Clemens, was just the fact that the people who thought they were very good actually saw a deterioration in their performance. So kind of the better you think you are and the cockier you are in terms of how you believe you can use these things, the less likely the result is that it'll be good. And I think in the context of crypto, there's a lot of cocky people, so we have to be careful in how we design our products.
Wow, that's deep. That's deep.
And I guess my very last closing question is because everyone here seems to have like some experience either with like developers or development or like products. So what are your like suggestions for anyone who are working on or would like or interested on working on sort of like decentralized AI or like this AI and Web3 integrated stuff?
I can add that, you know, I work with a lot of mm-hmm. MetaMask developers and Jira developer, mm-hmm. Web3 developers. The thing that we recommend thinking about is how does a developer experience change if it's a co-pilot that's helping you write the code, but also what's the actual deployment look like, right? Because you can write a web app, you can write a mobile app, you can write an extension, you can write a MetaMask snap, but where are the people using it? And is your target audience the actual users and people that might fund buying that product? Are they going to be, you know, helpful with that? Are you doing like an Electron app that then works on both mobile? And so there's all these different interesting options that I feel like a developer should be more conscious about, right, for their product mm-hmm. deployment, because now it might be AI agents making all the API calls, or it might be, you know, you developing an external facing AI agent that is the API call that does most of the interactions with mm-hmm. other developers. So that could be a future that's not too far down the road. So it might be interesting to think about like one level above just writing the APIs is how do I make somebody else write it, or how do I interact with somebody else that might be, you know, interacting with it.
Totally agree. I'd say to build on that, for product builders and devs, for the love of God, like, build something people say they want or need. It's too easy to use AI as a solution to a problem, as a solution looking for a problem, especially in the context of crypto. It's way too easy to launch some vaporware and a crappy white paper and launch an AI token. So just be wary of these mechanics and use them intentionally. Use them, you know, think through how these can be used as incentive mechanisms. But I think above all, really think through the problem you want to actually solve and who's actually going to be there on the demand side to actually use them. That's my two cents. I see a lot of projects out there kind of building something because it's cool, and then it's hard to scale. Even if you raise money, it's hard to scale because no one actually needs it. So, yeah.
Yeah, adding on to that, I just say, just partner up with a big chain, you know, partner up with a lot of users, find a big community, and then, you know, test it. And, you know, Web3 is, we're the best at, you know, feedback. We have our Discord, we have our, you know, Telegram, just, you know, tell us what's wrong, what's broken, what's this, you know, and in a sense, this is the first time anybody has ever been part of building an AI. So it's like novel in and of itself. So, like, you know, back with, you know, find a problem, like a real problem, and, you know, add that community, get those feedback, you know, just do it the Web3 way.
I'll build up on that, actually. I think that's a perfect sentiment to have, is like, okay, we have this the way that with centralized companies do is that they outsource their data, they found their, you know, labelers in a very, very systematic way. I think we want to be able to do more of just like in the Web3 way, where in a traditional sense, you don't have the markets that are able to, you know, capture some sort of data. Or, we want to be able to do that with crypto. And the more we do that, the interesting the models get, and maybe we find a sort of like a new unexplored space, or if you think about a tree that's unexplored branch that we go from the model space that only crypto can do, right? So I think that's the exciting side of this.
Yeah, and also try to get as much help as you can from different projects and partners, like big chains or even from us, because Web3 basically provides us this environment where indie developers, smaller teams, you can get all the grants, you can get all the, whether it's financial or technical help from different partners. So make sure you try off them and it might surprise you.
Yeah, definitely. Just the grants, like, go after the, you know, those grants, go build something for a chain, you know, find the problems that they want. It's, and you know, utilize AI to solve it. It's like the more brains on this, you know, the more giga brains on this, the better.
Yeah, this is kind of more general advice, but I found a lot of developers that are kind of stuck in the code, but aren't entrepreneurial enough. And so also keep in mind, like, put on different hats, because there could be, you know, single person run companies that are quite independent and can be quite successful, especially augmented with all of these different AI pieces. So developers don't just become, you know, introverted developers all the time. Like, think about the other options and orchestration across all of these.
Leverage AI agent to help you as well, you know, do your customer service or whatever.
Yeah. I think one last thing, coming from the AI space into crypto, for me, I think there's, what I observe is that there's some people building at this intersection that sometimes don't have foundations in the AI space to understand where the technical challenges come from. I think Alton mentioned bandwidth, right? For example, it's easy enough to say, hey, like, let's decentralize AI, let's do training across a whole bunch of nodes. And then, you know, you kind of forget, well, it just, latency is a huge issue. And I use that as an example, because if you've been on the other side and especially like a bigger tech company training these models, those things become fairly intuitive. If not, there's so much great content out there to really understand how these models work and how the infrastructure, why the infrastructure was built the way it was built. I recommend devs who are newer to AI to kind of really dabble in the AI engineer space and, you know, use cool frameworks like LangChain to get a sense of how LLMs are used and all that stuff, but then take it a step farther and try to understand a bit of the sort of underlying foundations of these models so that you can really kind of poke holes into assumptions made because of limitations in the Web2 world that Web3 is uniquely suited for.
Awesome.
Great. Anyone has any like close up comments?
I love you guys.
Yeah. So, someone should
yeah, do we should can, yeah, we should do this build, in real life again.
Yeah, definitely.
We should play games next time.
I want to be able to long and short GPUs. That's what I want to do. So if we could, if somebody can do that, I'll be happy to participate.
I studied AI history so much this month. I thought we were gonna have a game.
Yeah, maybe we should do like some sort of streaming next time. I think, yeah, so if no other like comments, I guess this is just all for today's space session, and thank you all for sharing, and thank you for everyone who's listening, and yeah, I'm very looking forward to talk to everyone soon.
Thanks, RSS3. Thanks, Annie, for hosting, and thanks everyone for listening in.
Yeah, thanks you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody.
Keep, bye. Keep in touch, guys. Keep in touch, families.
Yeah.
All right. Talk soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.